Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With us today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to have you here today.
Good morning, Dr. Paul. How are you?
Doing fine. Raring to go. We have maybe a little bit of good news, good information, at least sort of verified is a few of the things that we're saying. And it comes from Germany. I hope Germany's not on a blacklist or something. We can't use anything they say. Yeah. But anyway, I don't want to learn my economic policies from Merkel.
Yeah.
Okay, but the headline is going to be put up there, German study finds lockdown. No effect.
Yeah.
It didn't do any good.
Yeah.
I wonder how many dollars we could have saved.
Yeah.
I wonder how many dollars were lost in the economy.
Yeah.
I wonder how many people literally got sick with lockdown. How many people are continuing to suffer from lockdown? And yet, there are still people obsessed with it. You had one picture here recently of some liberal who says, I sort of feel good with, he felt comfortable with wearing his mask outdoors, even though he didn't need to. It's sort of, you know, it's just overworked. The condition of these people that they're undressed if they don't have their masks on. It's sort of neat, you know, that sort of thing. It's sad, though, from my viewpoint. But that that came out just last week. There was an article written by Paul Watson from the Telegraph, and it's good information to have it come out now. And one thing I wrote down when I was reading this is better late than never.
Yeah.
It's too bad they wouldn't have recognized the prevention. And later on, we'll talk a little bit about how this could have been prevented, except for a sudden. Change of course with Fauci, change of his mind, and turned out that he would refuse to get good advice, but we'll talk about that. But anyway, I think this is good that this is coming out. I think there are a few, not just us, but many others who would have suggested that it can be very negative. But then the other thing, it could have been suggested that working things out generally in a voluntary free market is almost always better than depending on the government. And I think that's where they failed, because there was total rejection and lack of confidence that free people could make a decision, because the decision had already been made. They're stupid. People are stupid, and they don't know what to do. So my argument with that is sometimes the stupid people get into government, and they're motivated to get there. And guess what? I think the CDC has hired a few of them.
Yeah, more than a few of them. But yeah, but Paul Watson wrote about it, but the original article was in the Telegraph, which is a very respected British newspaper. But it points out the researchers from Munich University, they took a look at the three lockdowns that Germany had imposed on its people in November, December, and April. And they looked at the numbers, they crunched the numbers, and they saw that the infection rates had already begun to fall when they implemented the lockdowns. Therefore, the lockdowns really had no effect. And people who watch this show know that we put up charts all the time that suggest this very thing, but it's good to have the scientific confirmation. And the German government, what it did, the same as the British government, the same as in France and elsewhere, is they ignore the idea of seasonality, that there is a seasonal flu, there is a seasonal bug. So they kept locking down and preventing it from spreading and petering out. But Paul Watson, in his summary of the German study, points out and reminds us that last year there was a leaked study from the German Ministry of the Interior that revealed that the impact of the country's lockdown could end up killing more people than the coronavirus itself, due to victims of other serious illnesses not receiving treatment. To that we would add suicides, alcoholism, depression, shortening lives, and other things as well. So the lockdowns killed more than they saved. That looks pretty obvious now. And there are other studies that we've talked about. Paul Watson writes about it in his piece. A study in January by Stanford found that the lockdowns do not provide more benefits to stopping the spread of COVID-19 than voluntary measures, et cetera, et cetera. So it's out there.
No doubt. It's interesting that the people who have a scenario and they have to promote it, how they can take facts and always spin them in a way, you know, like lockdown. Lockdown was the cause of this, and if it can help them, they'll say, yes, look, lockdown helped. Or if it doesn't happen, then they don't blame it. They either take credit or blame. Same way with vaccines. We've seen these charts that we've put up numerous times. All of a sudden, there's a crash in the number of cases and people dying and all this, and they would never suggest, they would never dare, admit that there's such a thing as a natural herd immunity that can develop. It was always, oh, we locked down and we gave them a lot of vaccines and look how successful we are, which is a continuation of a lie. Yeah. Now they think. As a matter of fact, I'm always trying to figure them out. It's probably in their minds a white lie. Yes, it's not exactly true, but we don't want to frighten the people, and we want to encourage them to obey us. And as long as they do that, we'll take care of them. So they go ahead and spin this. But I think that their feet should be held to the fire. And people who have misinformation, there should be liability. That's the way the market works. And of course, they get exempt. The vaccine companies get exempt from the liability. So the whole system, and then they spend all this effort, time, and money and advertising that what's this herd immunity? That doesn't work. You got to give them vaccines. And no matter what the charts show, they're in denial. That's why information like this can be very helpful to us.
It is. And Paul does also remind us of member Dr. Jay Bhattacharya from Stanford University, medical professor at Stanford University. My guess is, Dr. Paul, you don't get that position if you're a dummy. I would suggest. But he told Newsweek back in March, he called the COVID-19 lockdowns, quote, the single worst public health mistake in the last 100 years. So I think the question we have now is really, when is justice going to be done for the people who did this? And I think Macron in France, I don't know if you saw this, Dr. Paul, he got a little bit of justice himself. Not that I endorse violence, because obviously there's never a call for violence, but he went down and met with some village people in a village in France. He was getting ready to announce, I'm going to open it up. I'm going to let you guys have your freedom back. And he went up to a guy to shake his hand, and the guy slapped him in the face. So not a good thing to slap people, especially not heads of state, but it does show the level of anger and frustration about people having their freedoms attacked and taken away.
That's an example of natural therapy.
Yeah.
That guy was having some therapy. So I wanted to go on, if you don't have anything more on that. I wanted to talk about our friend Jeff Tucker, who brought attention to an article, and it's entitled, The Day Anthony Fauci Rejected Excellent Advice.
Yeah.
Of course, we've known about this advice, and we cheered him on. We tried to promote the advice. It's been around. But now Jeff came across an article that was sent to Fauci. And it's not that Jeff had all the answers, but it was just of interest, because the information was there, but there was a little uncertainty about exactly who might have written this very important letter. But that information was available from other people during that time. But that's been commonplace. But I think Jeff makes the point that there was a switch.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Almost a switch that Fauci, we see him as ambivalent back and forth, which he became that way. So he was trying to cover both bases. But Jeff's emphasis is talking about the time when he was open to a reasonable discussion on this. Yeah. Then all of a sudden, something happened. Who got to him? That's your question.
It is a good question. I'm glad that Jeff did this. He's pouring through the emails, and there's a lot of stuff in there. I think there's 3,000 pages. He's pouring through, but a couple of the points that Jeff Tucker made is that until about February 20th, Fauci seemed pretty rational about COVID. His advice kind of went along with how we dealt with these things in the past. Nothing unusual. Then on March 10th, he appeared before Congress, and he mixed up, if that's the case. Hopefully it was a mix-up. But remember, we talked about this on the show, Dr. Paul, he mixed up the infection mortality with the case mortality rate, which made COVID seem about 100 or 1,000 times, depending on how you do it, more deadly than it was. So people were looking at millions and millions of people dying in March 10th, and that's what set the whole thing in motion, the lockdowns, the mask, social distancing. And hopefully it was a mistake. Who knows what it was? But then Tucker goes through the emails that were released by FOIA and founds this email to Fauci on March 14th, 2020. And this is the day, as Jeff writes, the day after the Health and Human Services had privately released the U.S. government's lockdown order. So they were already planning on locking down. And this guy wrote a letter, and we could put up actually that next clip, because I pulled a couple of things out of the letter. It's probably too much to read. But this is from the individual who's written to Fauci about it. Michael Betts, his name is. He said, I want to convey an idea I had with regard to the coronavirus. It seems to me that trying to contain the virus as we're doing at present will be futile. Since the virus can be present for many days without a person having any symptoms, you would literally need to test everyone at the same time to determine who has it. An impossible task. And that is very important, because that's what the people who would kind of condense that thought to say the virus has got a virus. So the idea of trying to do this makes absolutely no sense. If we could just put it back up real quick. I just want to go through a couple of things in this note. If we could put that clip back up. Because I have a different thought. We know the virus is especially... Now, this is March 14th, 2020. Very early on, Dr. Paul. We know the virus is especially dangerous for the old and or immunosuppressed. In my opinion, we should be focusing all of our efforts on keeping that group from becoming infected. Encourage them to self-isolate, limit their social contacts, et cetera, et cetera. Sort of a reverse quarantine idea. And let's click the next one if you can. All very good. He says, quarantining otherwise healthy people outside those groups who finally demonstrate symptoms like NBA players is ridiculous. They're likely to get the sniffles and also have spread the virus, et cetera, et cetera. Let's go to the next one really quick. Of course, while this occurs, we are working on finding treatments and vaccine, but sending home workers who have next to no likelihood of being significantly impacted by this virus is ridiculous. The letter makes so much sense. Maybe Fauci doesn't read his email, although he did respond to the email. I think he said something like, thanks for sharing or something. But that lays out everything that eventually became the Great Barrington Declaration.
And Jeff touches on this in his conclusion. And I want to just read a sentence from that. He says, what we discovered from these emails is that Fauci was not in the dark.
Yeah.
He just chose to ignore what people were saying. Later that year, when the Great Barrington Declaration came out, which more or less said the same thing as the above letter, Fauci completely dismissed it. He quotes, quite frankly, that, I guess this comes from Fauci, quite frankly, that is nonsense. And anybody who knows anything about epidemiology will tell you that this is nonsense and very dangerous.
It's amazing. Amazing.
Schizophrenic. Oh, that's a dangerous term to use. But his thoughts are schizophrenic in that he's all over the place and they're unreal. They break with reality. You know, if he wants to take a position that's completely wrong and fits an agenda, but this whole thing about, being two people at different times, and I think before it's all over, he'll be another person trying to explain himself. But there was one other conclusion that he makes I think is interesting. And that is talking about the emails, and you talked a little bit about it. Who's liable? Who's responsible? Are they going to pay the price? And Jeff's wondering the same thing. These emails are just beginning. That's good. He'll keep reading these. Yeah. He admitted he can't read them all.
Yeah.
the redactions alone, especially as they pertain to Fauci's correspondence with Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook, cry out for investigation. Boy, this is a hard one for a lot of people. A lot of libertarians struggle with it. I've gone back and forth with it. But Mark Zuckerberg is not a libertarian, free market person that follows the non-aggression principle. He's an agent of the government, from my viewpoint. So he says these questions are not going to go away on how much the Biden administration wishes they would. I see Zuckerberg is sort of like a co-conspirator.
Yeah.
You know, he knows what's going on, and they have goals. And then these emails, that's why these emails are probably going to be very significant. That you might see, instead of Fauci just being, you know, mixed up and deliberately misleading people, you might find out that they are real co-conspirators on what their goals were, the ultimate goals, because most people are now agreeing. It made no sense to do this lockdown, yeah. And people suffer from it. They're continuing to suffer from it, and it's going to continue. And the biggest fear that I have is that this is just a warm-up session, because there could be another virus, you know, by fall,
yeah.
You know, after we conquer this one, and the heroes will come to the rescue. But I don't, right now, I don't think they're going to call on Fauci to lead the next one,
yeah.
But his partners in crime might.
Yeah, he's a fall guy. But the Zuckerberg thing is interesting, because I've read a couple of the emails where Zuckerberg was openly, you're right, colluding is the best word for it, colluding with Fauci. Hey, Dr. Fauci, basically, I'm paraphrasing, but how can we help you? How can we use our platform to silence people who disagree with you? And that's essentially what he did. You know, the whole business model of Facebook, you get people to go on there sharing pictures of their grandbabies and this and that and the other, and you sell them stuff. You take their data and you sell them stuff. So basically, the users are the customers that provide you the money. So this is a business owner, if you want to call it a private business, who stabbed his own customers in the back to curry favor with a government entity, i.e. Fauci and his group. So it's amazing to see, and I think it really bolsters your argument that he's acting as de facto agent of the state, not as a private business owner.
I'd be willing to bet a little bit on the fact that the people who are really involved in this, you know, whether it's social media network people or people in the pharmaceutical industry, that running through all this is an anti-Trump issue, you know, the hatred and the fanaticism against them, which Trump, you know, participated in generating
this. Yeah, he did, yeah.
But anyway, I think that you should take a Zuckerberg,
yeah.
You know, any one of those people aren't going to be very, very happy with Trump.
Yeah.
And they're hysterical. They're already terrified that he's going to run. I thought it was pretty neat yesterday that on the weekend, Trump said, I'm not going to run, something like that. Maybe that'll confuse them too. But anyway, I think this is an important article.
You know, some conspiracy-minded people are wondering, you know, was the virus hyped up or even created just to sell the vaccine? And maybe that's what Fauci's real job was, salesman for Big Pharma, because billions and billions have been made. But we want to move on, and we're trying to be a little bit more friendly to our governor. We've been very critical. He's done some stupid things. He did things that he never should have done, like shut down the state or interfere in any way with the way Texans behave or shop or what have you. Maybe he's trying to make amends, Dr. Paul. Maybe that's what he's doing. But let's put up this next clip. Now, Dan Horowitz, he writes for, I think, The Blaze, conservative publication. We've republished a lot of his stuff. He's very good on this COVID. So he tweeted out yesterday, hey, Governor Abbott, why are you allowing Carnival to sail out of Galveston and push vaccine passports when they were kicked out of Florida? And Abbott responded to Horowitz, which is really interesting. And Abbott said, I'm signing a law today that prohibits any business operating in Texas from requiring vaccine passports or any vaccine information. Texas opened 100% without any restrictions or limitations or requirements. So, and he did sign that law that did that.
You know, good business judgment has been generally recognized by both sides. They'll use it one way or the other. Republicans are a little bit better on using that. But there's been a lot of exceptions to this. We see tremendous corporate and banking support, who are supposed to be the free market business people, supporting Biden, and they still do. But this statement sounded like it was challenging that whole thing, that he was not going to go with Biden any better because he lives in Texas. He wants to be continuing to be governor. And of course, there's some activity in Texas about having a couple people running against him.
Yeah.
So that means there's a little bit of benefit by people speaking out and letting him know where we stand.
Probably the most charitable thing to say about Abbott is that he was kind of a coward, kind of spineless, and he had bad advisors. But I think when he saw, and this is probably to his credit, I don't know how you feel, Dr. Paul, but I think when he saw DeSantis getting away with it and getting kudos, and it wasn't a disaster, I think he got a little bit of courage. You know, he's like the lion in The Wizard of Oz. He got his heart, he got his courage, and is trying to do some decent things. And, you know, in his his mask order doesn't have any loopholes in it, you know, and any entity that's a state entity or doing business with state cannot require it. So it's pretty solid. Yeah,
and it was written in such a way that the first thing I thought about when I read this was, you know, do we have to violate the principle of the president having an issue and just telling what the businessman can or can't
do.
Yeah,
that's a big one. Yeah.
And he covered himself on that. And so this means that the government can't do it. And that's what, you know, the whole Constitution was written for the restraint of government. You know, it was never written and intended to restrain the people. And look at the restraint on freedom of speech and freedom of commerce and freedom of travel. It's all restraint. And so that he satisfied me on that, at least, that it was in the right direction. And it was gonna keep coming back because there's still a lot of people who are in bed with big government, and they can be intimidated, and big government in various ways, regulatory, financial, and all, can punish big business, you know. And they say if you're going to have contracts with big government, you can't have this. But the issue isn't dead and gone because there's still a lot of power in government, and they use that as a wedge to get in and intimidate business people to do what the deep state wants.
And I could see how people would question your endorsement of this, because on the surface it might look like he's telling businesses what they have to do and what they can't do. And even Goldberg, who used to be at National Review, I don't know if he's still there, he's a dummy, but he wrote, how is this different from no shoes, no shirt, no service? You know, why can't they do this? And but here, let's put up this next clip, because this is how he words it, and I think it's probably the best way you can do it without violating some principles of private ownership. The first part is just basically government entities cannot require any kind of vaccine information. But paragraph C says a business in the state may not require a customer to provide any documentation certifying that customer's COVID-19 vaccination or post-transmission recovery on entry to gain access to or receive services from the business. And here's the part. A business that fails to comply with this subsection is not eligible to receive a grant or enter into a contract payable with state funds.
That ought to be legitimate and understandable.
So there's a couple of other good things in it, though, Dr. Paul. It wasn't just limited to that. And let's look at this next link. There's some other good stuff in the bill. This next clip, if we have it, he talks about cycle threshold value. And he says that the executive commissioner shall require the reporting of polymerase chain reaction tests from clinical hospital laboratories to contain the cycle threshold values and their reference ranges. And that's what DeSantis did in Florida, which is you can't just dial it up to 45 when you want to make it look like cases and dial it down to 18 when you want to make it look like recoveries for what must be just political reasons. That's a good one. And the third good thing, let's look at this, the next clip. A public health disaster or public health emergency expires on the 30th day after the date of the disaster or emergency is declared or ordered by the commissioner. It can only be reviewed by the legislature or by the commissioner working with the approval of a designated legislative oversight board. That's pretty decent too, because the real problem is we've seen these endless states of emergency, California, for example, and Michigan, endless, and we had the same problem in Texas. It's probably an okay fix for that.
And what it's going to depend on is how the people react. If they roll over, believe me, there's somebody else to jump up and do it again. And that's why people have to be on guard, because there will always be another emergency coming up, and somebody else, even if we have our current politicians maybe saying, well, I better be a little more careful. But I think there's been some healthy things going on politically, that the issues that we disapprove of the most are being used in campaigns, and there's a lot of people, I think, sick and tired of it. I thought it was interesting in McAllen, Texas, they elected a Republican. I live here in Texas, and I've been in South Texas, and that would have been unheard of. And it had a lot, well, not a lot, the immigration issue was it, you know. So anyway, there's a limit to what the people will put up with, but there's no limit on the government what they might do to compete with them. Yeah. And that's what we have to do.
Well, you have a story from the annals of the cultural Marxism.
And this is interesting. This comes from, it was on Zero Hedge, but it came originally from Jonathan Turley, our friend. And the title was Malicious Communications, Scottish Feminists Criminally Charged for Tweets Opposing Gender Self-Identification. You know, a few years ago, people would say, what? What in thunder are they talking about? Boy, this is important now, because, you know, there was one place, it used to be they'd have two genders, but then it became three or four.
Yeah.
And now they're, some people argue there are hundreds.
Yeah.
Whatever they say they are, that's what they are, and they demand equal rights, you know, this sort of thing. But anyway, Millar, who was complaining about this, as is a transgender person herself, but she finally had enough of it, and she had a statement. She says, they accused her, the writer is accused of being a TERF, a trans exclusionary radical feminist, by critics due to her opposition. This is the crime, opposition to allowing males to declare themselves to be females. She could now face 2 years in jail. And I would have added, the declare themselves to be females so they can win all track races.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's
weightlifting, boxing.
But there is she's a feminist, and she understands that there should be a limit on it. But all it has done so far is expand the population, and having all kinds of groups thinking, oh, this is how you get special attention, and but some of that stuff is outrageous, and that's why I think news like this is important.
And like you said before the show, as libertarians, we don't care what people declare themselves. You could declare yourself a honeybee or a cow or a cloud, whatever, but the issue is the state's use of force. Just for simply suggesting that a man should not be able to call himself a woman and compete in these different things, she now faces 2 years in jail. So the state has elected to use its force, its use of force, use of violence against an individual for what that individual believes about genders. And that's the real problem.
You know, there was somebody that came to her defense of this, and it's a name I haven't seen for a while. It's probably 20 or 30 years ago. He suffered the consequences of being punished for writing things that were not conventional wisdom. And matter of fact, I think he had to go in an exile. It was a big, big issue. And that was the author, Salman Rushdie.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And
yeah.
Salman Rushdie says, he had a neat quote, and it's put in this article. And it said, the quote regarding that Rushdie said, nobody has the right to not be offended.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that is absolutely true. If you don't understand that, you don't understand the First Amendment. Yeah. The First Amendment is for controversy,
yeah. You
know, so you can say controversial things, whether they're religious, political, there's a line drawn, you don't hurt people. And if you go too far and you slander and do something of that sort, but to disagree, and that's been happening ever since the founding of the country. He says, Rush Wink goes on to say, that right doesn't exist in any declaration I have ever read. It's you know, sometimes truth can be simplistic and straight to the point, and I think he made it there.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to close with a tweet from somebody we both know and we both respect. And it's a good news tweet. Let's put it up here, because there's a real fight going on about people who've had COVID, whether or not they must get the shot as well. And Senator Rand Paul says, great news. A Cleveland Clinic study of 52,238 employees shows unvaccinated people who have had COVID-19 have no difference in reinfection rate than the people who had COVID-19 and who took the vaccine. And that is true. I took a look at the study itself and just the conclusions. They basically, if you've had it, and you got over it, you virtually have virtually zero chance of being reinfected. And so that's good news. That means you shouldn't feel forced, unless you want to go ahead and put some more stuff in your body, that's fine, it's up to you. But you shouldn't feel forced or coerced. And I think that underscores the importance of what people like Abbott and DeSantis are doing with the vaccine passports.
You know what's sort of sad is that you have to go through this.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought we lived in a free country. So he has to challenge the science, you know, or straighten out the science, because they come along and people are arguing the opposite. And if you check with the leaders of our scientific community, you go to Fauci, he says, oh no, and they have. It's been in the news that you could still get it and you can still spread it and all that nonsense. And Rand's on the right side of the political issue. If you believe in voluntarism and a free society, that shouldn't happen. You know, that shouldn't happen where you have to, you know, get permission or be forced, and to you'd have to get permission to be excused, or you have to, you know, threaten like they did lady that was, you know, threatened with prison for not going along with the gender issue. So I'm very pleased with Rand staying on top of this, and I hope the country wakes up to find the foolishness. You know, at the beginning when somebody asked me something about Trump, you know, and he was controversial and is controversial, I said that his greatest popularity from his first debate on was his willingness to speak to this crazy issue of political correctness. Yeah. He has to be the champion of political incorrectness ever. And according to a few people, including the people in this room probably, and also Rushdie, that you have a right to be politically incorrect if you don't hurt anybody.
Exactly. That was my final.
Okay, very good. Yeah. And I want to tell our viewers how much we appreciate you tuning into our program. And we are able to express our positive attitudes that when things are moving in our directions or making good points, that we can do this. And I go back and forth. There are some days when I look at the half full, half empty issue, and I think, boy, how are we ever going to get out of this? But I still think the people are out there. I think it's a communications problem. I don't think it's a numbers problem. I think we have the side of truth we're on the side of truth, and people want that. It's that the propagandists and the freebie stuff that goes on, and people have been convinced that it's the right thing to do, and that it's been sold because the opposition to our views have grabbed the moral high ground. And I think we can't win without grabbing the moral high ground. So that's why I'm delighted to see that right now, I think that the conservative libertarian elements are growing in numbers and dedication, and the Faucis of the world are on the ropes. Let's keep it that way. And please come back to see us at the Liberty Report soon.